Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Road Productions.
Welcome to the UIN Radio Show, and this is Paranormal Outlaw, the Mouth from the South, and joining me as always is Jeffrey Sterl. Martin Bravo is under the weather tonight, so he won't be joining us. And welcome, everybody. Hope you had a Merry Christmas and had a great holiday. And what's going on, Jeff?
Nothing much, really. Chilling, relaxing.
Did you have a good holiday?
I always do.
Did Santa bring you coal?
He bring me what?
Coal. You know, for being naughty.
Well, that's always the case. But the best thing I got, let's see, my buddy Ruben got me the Black Sabbath concert CD and DVD from their latest tour, so that was cool. And my parents got me a brand new microphone for recording.
Nice.
Which is what I really needed.
Bunch of clothes, bunch of DVDs, some CDs, some waiters for four wheeling, and that's pretty much it.
Oh, I thought you could get the waiters because you're full of shit.
No, sir. No. But that's all right. You go ahead and take your stabs because we're bringing back something we did a couple years ago. Little quiz about Jeff, and yeah. So it should be interesting. We'll get to that here in a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, we're rounding out 2013. Only two more days after today of this year, and we kick off a new year. So we'll see what happens in the new year. You know, maybe the Yankees or the Texans will make the playoffs.
If they do, great. If they don't, oh well. Unlike Cowboy fans, I don't depend on the success of my teams to affect my happiness.
It doesn't matter to me either way. Win or lose.
Yeah.
Quit
lying.
I'm not a dweller on things.
Quit lying.
I'm watching the game right now, and my expectations are that they probably will lose.
And
so
you'll be depressed
you
for about 3 weeks.
No, I will not.
And you'll
actually
be watching the Super Bowl or whatever the championship game is called now. And you'll be going, man, I wish my Cowboys were playing in this.
Yeah. They're not going to. Well, it doesn't matter. It don't matter.
That's what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I probably won't even watch it.
Yeah, we know. We know. Go back to watching Canadian football.
Man, it's not on at this time of year, man.
Ah.
It's on during the summertime.
Well, we went on a little ghost hunt last night, myself and Jeff and Dad and Dom and our friend Dusty and Allison, and we had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
A little activity going on. Dom and Allison kind of picked up something about a teenage boy that was buried out there and of how he passed away and whatnot, and did some research today, and they were actually pretty spot on with what they came up with last night. So they were pretty happy of getting reassurance of their gifts. So But, you know, we didn't. I did ask the spirits at some point there in that first cemetery. I asked them to, you know, slap you on the ass, but I guess we didn't get that, so.
You ought to know by now that they know better than with me. You should know that by now. They don't tangle with me. I'll whoop a spirit's ass.
Now, you know, Jeff, leading into the new year, we always make, you know, as the human race, we try to. Not everybody does it. I'm sure you don't. But people have New Year's resolutions, you know, things that they would like to do or try or, you know, complete in the upcoming new year. Now, here on our radio network and this radio show, I have a little thing here that is, you know, dedicated to you on New Year's resolutions.
What?
So let me play the theme song and we'll get going. If it plays.
What will happen to Jeff in the new year?
All right. The quiz is, what will happen to Jeff in the upcoming year? What are some of his resolutions and whatnot? So, question number one. In the upcoming year, Jeff will receive A, more bashing from Paranormal Outlaw and Martin.
No.
B, a ghost taking a run up his ass.
That's not going to happen.
Another losing season for the Yankees and Texans. Or D,
the Yankees didn't have a losing season. We won 84.
It's a losing season to them if they don't make the playoffs. So anyway, there's ABC. And then D is all the above, and I take D, all the above. All those are going to happen.
You are incorrect. Because, first of all, you know part two isn't going to happen there.
And I'll speak for Martin. He also was a D, all the above.
No. You're both incorrect.
Nine, number two. And we also have somebody on hold, so you might want to check that out before I move on to my next question.
Okay.
While we're waiting, folks, if you would like to find us on Facebook, we're the URN Radio Show on Facebook. You can like us there. We keep you updated on upcoming news and show information about guests. Also, the URN Radio Network, which is this network here that has shows just about every night of the week, paranormal shows. It's also on Facebook under URN Radio Network, and you can find us on those two Facebook pages. You can like us, and we'll keep you informed on upcoming shows and special guests that we have on here, and we'd appreciate it if you could.
So who do we got on the line here?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I didn't realize that was live.
Who do we got here?
My name is Bear Hogan. I'm a good friend of your guests.
Okay. Question four? Or just
I didn't realize. I guess my timing is horrible, obviously, because I just realized that she was. She just actually informed me that she was going to be on your show tonight. And I just now logged on, and I'm not able to get on to an actual Blog Talk page from my computer for whatever reason as of late. I don't know if it's something I did or I have no idea. But at any rate, I've known Karen for a very, very long time, and I always love to, you know, listen in to anything that she, you know, anybody that's that is willing to have her on and let her tell her story and tell about the great writing that she's done so far and the things that she has coming up in the near future is always exciting to hear about, and I always like to support her whenever I can, you know.
All right, we'll put you back on hold, and you can just listen.
Beautiful. Whenever she does come on, I'd love to, maybe just a couple seconds, just say hello to her or something, and let her know that I'm here and wish her on everything, not that she needs it, but, if you guys can remember, I'd love to be, I'm here, but, if you get a chance, maybe throw me back on there, and that way I can maybe say hello to her and go that route. Would that be all right, guys?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That'll work.
Cool. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Okay.
Back to the deal here. Just new investigation techniques next year will be A, sing kiss songs to provoke spirits.
Yes.
B, walk around nude asking spirits if they've ever been to Mars.
No.
C, carry cream and proclaim he is the cream catcher.
No.
Or D, all the above.
A, only A.
Martin, I say D.
Well, you, Martin, are incorrect.
All right. Now, the last one of the evening before we bring our guests on and whatnot. Jeff's paranormal New Year's resolution is A, to finally admit he is not the paranormal sex symbol. B,
that's a lie.
To buy a paranormal outlaw a tour bus. C,
no.
To have Gene Simmons take a run at his ass. D, finally admit he is not always right. And E, all of the above.
Well, D's not going to happen because I am always right.
No, not according to your students. They are taking a tally right now at your school how many times you are incorrect. And
if
you believe
me,
and I believe you tell me,
you have no proof.
Yeah, you told me earlier, last night, so, and you said it was up to 12, and right before the holiday, racked up 8.
Clearly I was drunk.
So, anyway, Martin, I take E, all the above. All those resolutions will happen.
You are incorrect on all of those.
Ah. Well, that is our comedy skit for the evening of pretty much Bashing Jeff, which we haven't done in a good while, so it feels good to do that in the year on a good note.
Oh, yeah, it's been only been 24 hours. Okay.
Well, I pre-warned you. So, but tonight, right now I know that we have Miss Karen Vance Hammond on hold, and she's a writer. She's co-writer with Kimberly Brule, and they have
written the. Hold on.
Hello.
Oh, wait. Here we go. Okay.
Okay, and we got Kimberly and Karen Vance Hammond. They're both co-writers of the book Secrets of the Shallows. And currently, right now, we have Miss Karen Vance Hammond on with us, so we're going to bring her on and talk with her.
Well, I tell you what, I just appreciate you having me on. You know, when you guys wanted Kim and I on the show to talk about Secrets of the Shallows, which is a paranormal mystery, I was absolutely elated, and I just want to say thank you so much. Something unexpectedly has come up with Kim. She does have emergency at home. It's nothing bad, but she may be coming on later on in the show, which is absolutely fine. She's a a wonderful gal, a wonderful writer, and also a great co-writer of Secrets in the Shallows. Secrets in the Shallows is actually my second novel, and it came out on Halloween night. A lot of people have read my first novel, Shoe Marks, which is a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas. And so they were very elated to hear that Secrets in the Shallows was going to be coming out. It came out October 31st on Halloween night of all nights, which was absolutely fitting. Now, since it came out to this day, we have over, and I know it's the I checked the stats on it just a few days ago. Kim and I are just absolutely elated. It has over 35-star reviews already. This novel is rocking. I mean, a lot of people enjoy it. They enjoy the paranormal in it. They enjoy the mystery in it. If you like CSI and if you like Criminal Minds, if you like the paranormal, of course, and if you like forensics, you will absolutely go crazy over this novel. It was so much fun writing it and creating it and getting the ideas and co-collaborating with Kim. It just turned out to be awesome. And like I said, thank you so much for having us on tonight.
Hey, not a problem. Before we get into the book itself, for our listeners out there, give them a little bit of background of how you got into writing and whatnot.
How I actually got into writing, you know, I never even thought about becoming a writer. I mean, here I am, as a lot of people know, and I'm sure that you know as well, that I have dyslexia, and I also have a learning disability and a reading disability, and I never had the opportunity to really go into a regular classroom with regular kids. I always wanted to be with the smart kids, but I couldn't. So I was placed in special education all of my life, including college, because I didn't want to go to a regular college. I had to go in what was called the Jones Learning Center. I could not read until I was 11 years old. I could not write well. So having this disability of dyslexia, having a learning disability and a reading disability on top of that, there's no way that I would even contemplate about being an author until I met Jennifer Stone. And, of course, that's about Shoe Marks. I'm really not going to talk about Shoe Marks that much tonight. This is Secrets in the Shallows tonight. So when I met her, that is when I had the idea about this novel. But I did not think that I would be able to do it with the disability that I have. You know, come on, me? I mean, a person who has dyslexia, a person that has never entered a regular classroom, a person that has a reading disability, come on, me? No way. But I took the bull by the horns. Instead of letting the bull run over me, I took the bull by the horns, and I wrote this novel. Now, after Shoe Marks came out, I had already written the first draft of The Monastery Murders, which became Secrets in the Shallows. Now, this is kind of interesting. After I had written the first draft, I was looking for an editor. I had lost my editor on Shoe Marks, a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas. And Kimberly Burlett, she came online, and she and I got to be friends, you know, got to talking. We both have kids, you know, the life thing, you know, the mom thing. And so I told her, I said, well, I am also an author, and she was very intrigued by that. And she said, well, I'm also an editor. And I said, really? So I said, I tell you what I want to do. I want to go ahead and I would like to send you what I have, the first draft of The Monastery Murders. And, you know, just if you like it, see if it's something that you would like to edit. And that's one thing. I know that people out there, they ask me all the time, is it important to have your manuscript edit or should the writer do it? The answer is no. You always have a professional editor. I don't care how good you are. Even Stephen King has a professional editor. So it's very important that you have your work edited, not by the author, but by somebody else. And so I sent it to her, and she said, oh, my gosh, I absolutely love this. This is rocking. And so, you know, she agreed to edit it. Well, you know, we started co-collaborating on ideas, and, you know, she would come up with an idea, and I would come up with an idea, and I would write, and she would write, and more ideas. And then I asked her, why don't you just come on board with me? Let's do this together. This is only the first draft that I sent you. This is certainly not the last draft, but why don't you come on board with me? And she said yes. So it was fun on how we wrote this paranormal mystery. I mean, if you can imagine two paranormal authors, two paranormal investigators getting together and writing a sensation, I tell you what, we did. And so it's really been very, very interesting. And, of course, the story itself, Secrets in the Shallows, with people absolutely are eating this novel up. Mm-hmm. They love it. They really, really are enjoying it. And I am very thankful for that as well.
Nice. excuse me. It's really wonderful that you fought through all of what you have. Being dyslexic and whatnot, and then collaborating with Kimberly and producing a great novel.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So when y'all did the book and, you know, come up with the storyline and everything and whatnot, and so how well did y'all work together? Was, you know, you pretty much were on the same wavelength with the way the book should go and all the twists and turns?
Absolutely. I think that Kim and I have spent countless hours, thousands of hours on the telephone together. I am located in Houston, Texas. She is located in North Carolina. So our communication had to be on the money. It had to be right. We had to be able to communicate when we needed to. But like I said, we spent hours on the phone, hours on Skype, hours on the computer, going back and forth with ideas, making sure that the storyline flowed the way that it needed to flow. And so that's the thing. If you're going to write a novel with a co-author, first of all, you have to have an open mind. Second of all, you have to be able to be honest with each other. And if you can't do that, then you're not going to produce a good book. So that's really important. The third thing is to have that line of open communication. I will say this. Kim and I have never physically met. We've met on Skype, on telephone, on Facebook. But as far as sitting down in the same room together, we haven't done that, which is really a remarkable thing because of the distance. But, you know, with the greatest technology that we have, it's like we are being in the same room together. And so writing the novel, coming up with the ideas, coming up with the paranormal, coming up with the awesome mystery that is embedded between the pages of this novel, I mean, it's absolutely incredible on how we were able to do that and come up with a good product that people enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I talked to, when I interviewed Kimberly on my other show that I work on, Terrify Radio, she said that this story was inspired by a dream you had?
Yes, it was, when I lived in the state of Maine. Back a few years ago, I had one of the most horrific, hellacious nightmares of my life. And, you know, every person has a nightmare that they remember. But this one was so real to me. I mean, you could feel the dew in the grass on your ankles when you were running. Excuse me. I'm allergic to Houston. Pardon me, but it was a dream that just stayed with me. Well, Shoemarks was already written, and I thought, you know, well, what in the world am I going to do now? And I had already started The Monastery Murders, but I thought, you know, why not take this dream, this nightmare that I had, and just wrap a story around it? And it, we did. That's exactly what we did. And, you know, a lot of authors will come up with ideas like that. You know, they'll say, an idea, how the hell did you get this idea? And a lot of authors, just like myself, some of their books are about a dream they had, which, you know, the monastery Secrets in the Shallows is about a hellacious dream that I had, and I just wrapped a story around it. You have to be very, very creative, and if you can do that, then, you know, that's a really good thing. So, you know, taking that creativity and taking the dream, and, you know, the dream was actually about, which I also have it in the prologue, and I thought that that was really important. I don't know that if you read the prologue, but a lot of people have, and they're going, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. In the dream that I had, I dreamed that I was engaged and that we were going to a reception. Well, every time I passed this monastery, there was this nun that was really eerie eyes, and she had an axe, a battle axe that had blood dripping from it. And I wanted to go and investigate it, and when I did, she started chasing me. When I stopped, I put my hands in front of my face, and I screamed as the axe came down on me, and, of course, I woke up. And I had that, like I said, a few years ago, and it just never left my mind. So I thought, hey, why not wrap a story around it? Thus, The Monastery Murders was the original title of it, and now it is Secrets of the Shallows, The Monastery Murders, Book 1. After we had finished writing the story, if you can imagine coming up with a 900-page novel, which is what we did. Now, I really don't know how many words that is. I'm not into the logistics of it and the word count, but it did come up with 900 pages. Well, Kim and I both agreed 900 pages is too much. Shoemarks, my first novel, a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas, is in libraries across the nation. And so more often than not, a high school college, they're not going to pick up a 900-page novel. I mean, that's just fact. And so what we decided to do was we decided to split the novel at the perfect place where it left a cliffhanger and then the second part, which is already written, and we're polishing that up now, that part will be called Devil in the Details. So that's what we did. We went ahead and we split it up. Now it's two books, and I tell you what, people are really, really enjoying it.
Well, that's good. That's real good.
Yeah, I don't think I could collaborate with Jeff. Our stories would not be on the same page.
Well, I tell you what, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't see eye to eye, but then there's a lot of people out there that do. And I was very fortunate to find Kim and, you know, to be able to co-collaborate and stay on the same page. You know, that's a really important thing to do if you're going to be going out into this venture like this.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Now, you said it also involves the paranormal in your story.
Yes, it does. At the very beginning of the book, one of the things is, and I probably need to go ahead and read the prologue to you so that you can get a feel on what the novel is about. That is, if you want me to. Let me go ahead and read it to you, because this is where the paranormal starts in this novel, is with this horrific murder that takes place. So let me go ahead and read it to you. I'm not the best reader in the world, but I can certainly give it a shot. Okay, here we go. All right. Dense fog blanketed the canopy of autumn trees, arrayed in a myriad of yellow, oranges, and reds. From the distance, ghostly wails from a foghorn were sounded throughout the valley. Its melancholy sound sliced through the silent evening air as its vibrations crept up the lighthouse spiral staircase. In the lantern room at the top, the Fresnel stood sentinel, rotating endlessly and casting its beams of light out and out into the water. Anchored in the bay below, lobster boats gently rocked back and forth in the surf while the ominous storm clouds encroached upon them. A large black crow landed on the shoulder of a marble statue of the Blessed Mother Mary, standing watch over the monastery lawn. Dangling from the sacred maternal hands, a long strand of rosary beads swung back and forth in the coming storm's steady breeze. Loud calling emanated from the bird's black beak as it spread its wings and flapped them vigorously. The feathered hunter took only a moment to study its surroundings before flying away to find a safe haven from the storm. Rumblings of thunder filled the air as several streaks of lightning clashed with the ocean in the distance. Light winds began to swell and howl while passing by the beautifully arched monastery windows. Raindrops steadily tapped on the colored panes of glass, echoing throughout the corridors as the storm began its descent upon the campus. Suddenly, another loud booming noise erupted as the monastery door was thrust open by a nun, frantically fleeing from the entrance. Dressed in a dark burgundy habit, she ran down the front steps, flailing her arms and screaming, "No! Get away from me! Get away from me!" Only seconds behind, a taller nun in a black habit clutched a short-handled battle axe with gloved hands while chasing after the escaping sister. A dark figure slipped on the wet grass while scurrying after the nun as she fled. Regaining her footing, the nun in black continued to pursue the fleeing prey as it ran, as rain began to come down in torrents. A frantic nun ran for her life into the woods as her screams for help disappeared into the wind like smoke on a winter gale. Her burgundy habit flared out behind her as she tried to escape. Evergreen branches slapped her face and scratched her arms as she tried to elude her pursuer. The nun's only goal was to find a safe place to hide. As the terrorized nun ran through the woods, a low-lying branch caught her headpiece, exposing her long, beautiful blonde hair now being drenched in rainwater. Looking back through a blinding sheet of rain, she was lost in a sea of branches and tree trunks. Turning to run again, she immediately slammed into her stalker. Tears burst from her big blue eyes as a look of absolute terror came upon her. "Please, let me go. What do you want with me? What do you want to move? What do you want with me?" The ghastly nun peered into her eyes with disgust and grabbed her arm so hard that she could feel the nail claws into her skin. Desperate to get away, the smaller nun tried to rip her arm free, but could not escape from the dark nun's grasp. In a vile, hissing voice, the assailant ordered, "Get down on your knees." Panicking, the nun pleaded, "No, no, no, don't do this. I am innocent. I have a family who loves me back there. I have done nothing wrong to deserve this." Falling to her knees with her palms pressed together in front of her, she begged, "Please, don't hurt me." The dark nun hissed mockingly, "Deserve? Deserve?" Without hesitation, a gloved hand rudely slapped the nun's cheek. "Shut up, sister." Nun covered the side of her face as the nun fell. Her long blonde hair splayed into the wet ground, frantically attempting to get up. The final thing the frightened nun saw was a sharpened battle axe blade swinging toward her. A look of complete panic was locked on her face. A look of complete panic was locked on her face as her head landed on the ground. Her wide-opened eyes blinked twice as her mouth voiced a silent protest. Her lifeless body slumped in the mud and landed beside it. Red blood spilled out from her severed neck into the rain puddles all around her. Desperately, the murderer trudged through the mud where the nun's habit hung loosely on the branch of a gnarled old tree. Lifting it up in the rain, the killer inspected the headpiece for any tears before shoving it into a large pocket. Still holding the bloodied axe, the murderer turned to look at the victim one last time, then slipped silently through the trees and faded into the shadows. Somewhere in the dark of night, restless eyes twitched erratically beneath their slumbering lids. An eerie moan slipped between the chapped lips of its confinement. In the dreamer's mind, a rising wail of anguish rose to join with the booming clap of thunder. Violently, the figure bolted from bed as a white flash of lightning drove the shadows from the room and momentarily blinded the one sleeping eyes. That is the end of the prologue. It was actually a dream that the person was having. But
wow.
The question is, was it real? Did it really happen?
Mm-hmm.
You got to read Secrets in the Shallows to find out. One of the things about, you know, when we wrote this paranormal mystery, one of the things that we really wanted to bring in is the feeling that a person has, the personification, bringing in the scariest prologue that we could write about the dream that I had. And I think that we hit it right on the head.
Yeah, and I believe Kim had told me that, you know, with the paranormal in the story, it's more of the spirits or whatnot that's in the book actually try to help solve the crime, you know, give details and stuff.
That is correct. Absolutely. When one of the things is that, you know, as the murder takes place in the very first chapter, there is this young man. Now, he is not a young boy. I want you to understand that. But he is a young man. And he is dragged down the stairs, actually dragged down the stairs, being pulled by his hair as blood seeps from his hair follicles, screaming for his life. Now, why was he there? Why was he in the monastery? He was in the monastery because he was doing chores for not adhering to the school dress code. So he was there by himself. When Mother Superior Mary Ellen leaves, this nun, who you don't know who this person is, he or she is faceless. You cannot see who the person is, runs up the stairs, grabs him, takes him downstairs, and kills him in the monastery pond. Now, the parents are looking for him. They are absolutely frantic. They're looking for him. The next day, he surfaces face down. And I know that this is a novel, like I said, it does have paranormal, it does have mystery in it. Now, getting to answer your question about the paranormal, after this murder takes place, there are four people that come on the scene. We have these characters. We have John Smith, who is district attorney in Watsonville, Maine. Then we have Katie Warsaw, who is the fiance of John Smith, who happens to be a paralegal. We also have Sheriff Johnson, who is leading the investigation. And then we have hotshot, gorgeous Peter Balkin, who is with the forensic state of Maine, who is trying to solve this murder. Now, to answer your question, the paranormal does help solve the murders. Yes, it does, because guess who is in that monastery watching everything down below? There is paranormal activity in this monastery as it is being investigated, and the clues are dropped one by one. Guess who it is?
I don't know.
Well, I will say this. It wasn't a dream. So, yes, the young woman who was murdered, decapitated, she is in the monastery. Her spirit is there, and she is desperate to help these people find who the murderer is. Now, there's not just one murder that happened. There's not just two murders that take place. But you also have the spirit of this young woman who walks the halls. And I'm going to read you another segment in just a few minutes about the very first paranormal on what happened to Deputy when he came in, Deputy Williams, when he came in to investigate the monastery. But also one thing, too, is that not only is there one murder that takes place, which is the woman, the dream is actually real. But you also have Timothy Fields, who has been horribly murdered. Of course, you have his parents looking for him. Now, one of the things that they do is that because he was murdered in the monastery pond, Sheriff Johnson was frantic that it was another you-know-what. And the you-know-what means, is that there was a previous murder that happened in the same pond before, and they were never able to solve it. In fact, what they did was that they chopped it up as suicide. When they dredged the pond, they actually got divers down there, and they dredged that pond, and they found the rope that was around Timothy Fields' neck. But they also found something else. They found a red strap that was protruding out of the muddy bottom of that pond, and they pulled it up, and it belonged to another young man who was previously murdered in that pond, and the investigation gets even more hyped up. It gets even more faster. And, of course, you know, when people read the monastery murders, Secret in the Shallows, they always think, oh, I know who did it now. I know who did it. But then Kim and I trick you. No, you don't know who did it. And so it's really interesting. But the monastery, you know, taking our experiences as being investigators and then writing this novel and writing the paranormal that is in there, it is really something. We had a lot of fun doing that. Let me go ahead and read to you. In fact, I'm not even in the chat room tonight, so I can't even see what's going on because I'm not in there. But let me go ahead and pull up this segment.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Okay. I should have already had it up, but I didn't because I didn't realize. Let's see here. Okay, let me find this for you. All right. Now, this is when the very first part, this is after the first murder takes place with the young woman, with the unidentifiable nun. Her head is gone. I read you that. She's been decapitated. There is another murder that takes place with Timothy Fields. I told you about that and how his body was found. And
I had a lot of fun writing. Kim and I had a lot of fun writing about actually what the body looked like that was in the water. Of course, that's pretty horrific, and I'm not going to read that to you now because of the fact that there could be young children listening in, or later on our archives. But let me go ahead. Now, we have another character. His name is Deputy Williams, and he is the go-to man. He is investigating this monastery. Not only is he investigating it with Sheriff Johnson, but he is the lead sheriff, and he is now in the monastery. They have their walkie-talkies. They are trying to find out clues on who murdered these two young men, who murdered the woman, and so here we go. All right. Let me go ahead and find this. Okay, and I'm going to start probably in the middle of the chapter. Okay. Treading softly up the center aisle, his heavy footsteps were muffled by a thick carpet. Now, he is in the actual cathedral. Treading softly up the center aisle, his heavy footsteps were muffled by the thick carpet. A deep boom was sounded throughout the empty sanctuary. Stopping suddenly, he turned around in time to witness the door shutter as it closed. At the rear of the monastery, two golden angels appeared down at him from the railing of the balcony. He could almost hear the young tenor voices singing in unison as their beautiful hymns emanated out while they praised God above the audience arena. As Deputy Williams pivoted and walked toward the front, he let his hand drift over each top of the pew. The handcrafted wood pews had been placed in the monastery during construction over 100 years ago. Even the prayer books and hymnals that lined the back of the pews were decades old. Many parishioners had used them for generations as they said their prayers on the kneelers. Looking to the back of the room, he could see the intimidating confession booth waiting for those who sought forgiveness of sins. I've made a lot of confessions in there, he chuckled to himself. The rainbow of light began to dim and fade, giving a sinister feel to the already cold and eerie atmosphere that made the deputy's hair stand on the back of his neck. His breathing waned as he had the distinct sensation of someone staring at the back of his head. An intense flash blazed throughout the room as a bolt of lightning hit near the monastery, causing the light to flicker. Deputy Williams was startled at the deafening sounds rolled through the immense building. Get a grip, Williams. Get a grip, you Williams. Come on. Get a grip. Get a hold of yourself. He stopped for a moment and turned around to find a... He stopped for a moment, turned around to find a shadow nun standing at the closed wooden entrance. Recalling old horror movies of his youth, he feared overwhelmed the deputy for a moment. Instinctively, he stepped back in to recoil and tripped over the end of the pew. He looked back at the door just as the nun vanished before his eyes. Trying to determine where the nun had gone, Deputy Williams shot his gaze in all directions and placed his right hand over his pistol. Unfastening the strap, he was ready to defend himself if necessary. Making his way towards the front, Deputy Williams slowly walked up some steps leading to the short marble table on each end. Candlesticks adorned with crowns of small flames stood diligently against the encroaching shadows. In the center, a small tray was gently draped with the white linen cloth. Lifting the hem of the fabric, Deputy Williams revealed an ornamental wine goblet with small flower motifs and etched in vines, which stood on a matching golden plate. Removing the cloth, he closely examined its delicate engravings as he set the goblet and cloth to the side. Picking up the plate, he was mesmerized by the design. But when he looked in the reflection, his eyes widened as the nun stood in back of him, staring. He froze for a second, unsure of what to do, but kept keenly aware of his surroundings. Focusing on the plate, he watched as the nun vanished once more. Turning around quickly, he saw nothing but empty space. Who is that? Who's out there? Somebody, show yourself! Out of the shadows, a creaking noise caught his attention. Stopping dead in his tracks, he listened for where it came from. Pulling out his pistol and holding it in front of him, he cautiously began to walk down the steps heading toward the sound. Upon hearing another creak, Williams looked around and whispered to himself, There's got to be somewhere here. I'm going crazy. Get a hold of yourself. I'm going crazy. His heart raced as he proceeded over to the small shrine of candles. As he lit one of the candles, he whispered to himself for Timothy Fields and Tom Green. As the flame suddenly went out, Williams felt another chill run through his body. Turning around immediately, he found a nun with long, wavy blonde hair staring back at him, clothed in white apron with a black dress. She wore no habit. The ghostly nun looked at him and said, "What about me? My soul needs prayer, too. My life was taken from me." And that is, of course, the very first part when Deputy Williams has his first paranormal encounter while searching in the monastery.
Now, when it comes to when you have, like, a murder and you have the cops and all that stuff, do you guys do research on what they do in an investigation and whatnot?
Absolutely. One of the things that we did was, you know, when you write a novel, you don't just want to throw a whole bunch of stuff in there that you don't know what you're talking about. First of all, it shows your ignorance, okay? But one of the things is that we had professionals on this book. There were two attorneys that I consulted because, of course, there's legal stuff and there's courtroom drama. So we made sure that we had attorneys on the book as well that we could advise to. You know, they could give us advice. But we also had police that were on this book as well. If we had a question, I knew exactly who to call. We also had an FBI investigator that I also worked with to make sure that everything was right. And I'm going to give you an example of this. You know, if you don't know what actually really takes place in dredging a pond, you need to ask somebody. You need to go to the police department. You need to find out exactly how it is done. But there was a comment that was made a while back from a reader who questioned why there would be diving suits and why there would be air water flowing through the diving suits. And it was so we explained to her that if you have sub-freezing temperatures in Maine, of course, it's snowing, it's cold, it's winter, you're not just going to just go diving in a pond, you're going to die. So it was important that we had the thermal dive suits that actually had the warm water running through the
the dive suit. We put that in the book because we wanted to make sure that when the reader reads the book, that everything, that nothing is left out. There is a lot of detail in the book about how things happen and why it happens.
Yeah, the more realism that you put into a book, the more the reader is engulfed in it.
Yes, yes. A lot of people do enjoy it.
Nice. Jennifer, are you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Well, I think we're going to take a short break so that people can go to the restroom and whatnot, and then we'll continue our chat, Karen. And maybe Kimberly will come in the second half sometime. If not, we'll just continue chatting with you.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back shortly.
All right. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many have been soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ at his moment of doubt and pain made damn sure Pilate washed his hands, sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Oh,
All right. I don't know what that. Look at it. Now I got a lot of noise going on here.
Right?
Hello.
Right. We're back, and we're talking with Karen Van Tannen, co-writer of Secrets of the Shadows. One thing I wanted to ask, when it comes to the paranormal aspect, have you had any paranormal experiences yourself?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I have experienced paranormal myself. Actually, most of the paranormal happened when I was writing my first novel, Shoe Marks, a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas. The very first time that I ever experienced the paranormal ever was when I was living in the state of Maine. I was house-sitting for an old woman. Her name was Dolly. She lived in New York City at that time, earlier in years, and she danced with the Rockettes. And when I went there, her daughter said, "Now, if you hear anything, if you see anything, please don't be scared by it. We're just so used to it that we don't even pay attention to it anymore." And I said, "What in the world are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, back in the day, there was a young man who hung himself with his own belt in his closet. He had committed suicide, and he's still in the house today." And I tell you what, you know, I had never experienced anything paranormal. I was raised in church. My father was a Sunday school teacher for over 40 years, and I have to tell you, I laughed in her face. I said, "There is no way. This stuff is taboo. No way." Well, after they left, I sat down, Dolly and I were watching a Fred Astaire movie, and there was an old Coca-Cola bottle, the glass kind. It was sitting on the bookshelf, and it fell, just free fell. There was no bang. There was no vibration in the house. It just fell, and it started spinning, and the end of the Coke bottle stopped in my direction. The water started turning on and off in the kitchen. I heard footsteps on the second floor, and I grabbed onto that woman, and I said, "What is that?" And she said, you know, she had a real Maine accent, and she said, "Honey, he's here." And I absolutely was petrified, absolutely petrified. But I was also interested in a way. But I was also scared to death because I had never experienced anything like that before. The second time that I experienced the paranormal activity was when my husband and I and my daughter, she was 3 at the time, we had just purchased a home that I didn't know that had paranormal activity in it. And there was one time where my daughter, she was at her crib, and she should have been taking her nap. I heard laughing, and I heard giggling, and I got out of bed because I couldn't sleep, and I peeked around the corner, and there she was in her crib, and she had her thumbs in her ears, and she was wiggling her fingers, and she was sticking her tongue out going, funny man. And she would put her hands over her eyes, and she would play like she was playing peekaboo. And she was, "Peekaboo, I see you, man, peekaboo." Well, she saw that I was watching her, and she said, "Mommy." And she pointed to an empty corner in the room. Nothing was there. Nothing. She said, "Mommy, don't you see him? Funny man." Of course, I knew not to tell her that there wasn't anything there. I didn't need to downplay it. And I said, "Oh, sweetheart, what does funny man look like? All black, shirt, black pants, black shoes, and a big black tall hat." And to me, that kind of she was describing somebody, something, what Abraham Lincoln would have wore. And then she put her hand, her thumbs in her ears again, started wiggling her fingers and playing peekaboo, and then she said, "Mommy, you made funny man go away." Well, a couple of weeks ago after that, I was taking a shower, and there was hairspray cans that were falling, and there was makeup bottles that were falling. And I asked my husband when I got out of the shower, I said, "What in the world are you looking for?" And he said, "Honey, I've been outside the whole time." So, you know, yes, I have experienced paranormal activity. And the thing is that unless if you experience it for yourself, and those that are listening, if you you don't know what I'm talking about or the feeling unless if you experience it for yourself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I was a skeptic myself until I got into the paranormal, and I saw pretty quick there's something going on that we can't explain. And being here in Texas, there's a lot of activity in this state, believe it or not.
Oh yes, there is. Now, what part of Texas are you in?
I'm in Longview, East Texas.
And, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And Jeff, he lives down in, he's from East Texas, but he lives in Gatesville. So he's down by Austin area.
Okay. Now, I am originally from Shreveport, Louisiana. So if you know where that is, and I have family that actually went to a Pine Tree High School there in Longview. So it's a small world, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I actually live in the Pine Tree area here in Longview.
Yes, it's beautiful up there.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean there's a lot of activity. That have you ever been when it comes to the paranormal and in your book, did you guys go on any paranormal investigations or talk to paranormal investigators?
Now I am also I'll answer that question. Yes, I am a member of Houston Paranormal Research Team. But up in northeast Texas, my husband and I, we were able to investigate the Hotel Jefferson, which is actually in Jefferson, Texas. And I don't know if you've ever been there or not, but room 19 supposedly has a lot of activity in it. My husband and I were there, and when we were standing in the room, the door actually slammed in our faces.
Wow.
So, yeah, northeast Texas has a lot of activity. Of course, southeast Texas does too. And, of course, Galveston has a lot of activity as well from what I've been told.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've been to Jefferson numerous times, so we know that town quite well. It's a very haunted town. There's just about every building or home in there has some sort of activity, it seems like.
Yes.
Well.
Now, with Shoe Marks, my first novel, which also won the Paranormal Awards, Book of the Year in Literary Category for 2013, it is located close to Jefferson. I'm not going to give the actual location, but it is located between Dallas and Jefferson. So, yes, there is a lot of activity up in that area.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, didn't you write a play that had to do with the paranormal?
I guess I did.
Yeah, I forgot about that. It just clicked in my head that you actually wrote a – was that one of the plays you got actually performed?
No, ended up not going with this one. The one that was performed was about the Texas Railroad Killer.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, combining the paranormal and, you know, because everybody out there likes a good murder mystery type story, especially one that you think you know who the killer is, you know, but then a little twist gets thrown in, and then you're like, nope, it's not that one, you know, and you just have to keep reading, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So throwing in the paranormal as well, and like Kim and I talked about, you know, that a lot of times in the entertainment industry, whether it be books, movies, TV shows, whatnot, the paranormal is always depicted as evil or scary, you know, trying to get those scares, which I'm sure there's probably some scares in your book as well. You gotta have that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, we have some parts in fact, I have some parts in Shoe Marks, and, you know, Kim and I put some very scary parts in Secrets in the Shallows that will actually raise the hair on your arm. So, you know, we had a lot of fun writing this stuff, though. And, you know, putting that paranormal in there, I thought that was very important to do that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I've even, you know, I've read some of the books before, prior to the movie version comes out, and it always seems that the book scares me more than the damn movie.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's one thing that with a book, you actually get really involved with the characters, you know, because Jeff and I, our background, both of us have degrees in theater, so, you know, we're into plays and whatnot and portraying characters, so, you know, a good novel with a story is the same type thing, you know, you get engrossed in those characters and what they're going through.
You know, that's one thing that Kim and I really wanted to bring out in our writing is that, you know, a lot of people, when they write a novel, they're narrating. He said this. She said this. He wore this. She wore that. She walked into this room. He walked into that room. And basically, that's narrating. That's narrating a novel. What we did was that we went from the inside out. Okay, and we wanted to make the reader as though they are part of the story. And you don't see any narration. You see actual events that are taking place, and you can feel what they're feeling. You can see the facial expressions. You can see the fear. You can hear the laughter or the crying. And so that's what we wanted to do, really put a lot of personification in there. When Deputy Williams was in the monastery, when he was in the cathedral, when he experienced the paranormal for the first time, we wanted to lay out everything and let you see that when he picked up the plate on how there was beautiful, intricate designs. We wanted the reader to actually see and not just have to imagine.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, that's a good way to explain a story, in my opinion. You know, you want to, you know, the sign of a good book is when you first start reading, you start getting so engulfed in it, you ignore everything else around you and you don't want to put it down.
Yes, and a lot of people have said about Shoe Marks and Secrets in the Shallows that they absolutely cannot put this book down. Kimberly Burlett is now going to be coming on the air now. Apparently she was able to work out what issues she had at home or where she needed to go or what she needed to do, so she's going to be coming on. But one thing that I do want you to do is that I want you to go to Amazon. I want you to read the reviews. I think that's really important. We have some really big people that were endorsed Secrets in the Shallows. One of them is Discovery Channel Bill Bean. Of course, he was on Haunting. Another big endorsement that Secrets in the Shallows has had is award-winning author Michael Rivers, who is also a paranormal author as well. So if you want to see what the book looks like, all you have to do is go to Amazon, and it's right there. You can see what the back cover looks like. You can see
what this, the front cover looks like, and also you can read, you know, a few chapters as well. A lot of people have done that. So Kim should be coming on in just a few minutes. She just came online.
Well, nice. Then yeah. We'll get both authors of the book will be on with us, so that'll be great. Now you mentioned Amazon, and we'll say this later in the show, towards the end of the show as well. But where can you purchase this book?
Well, you can actually purchase it on Amazon. It is right there. All you have to do is write in Secrets in the Shallows, and it's right there. It's also available in paperback. It is also available in ebook as well. So you can get, you know, whatever you like. If you have a digital reader, you can get the digital. And if you have paperback, a lot of people like paperbacks. And I tell you what, over the holidays, people were grabbing Secrets in the Shallows like crazy. They wanted a personalized signed paperback. And so a lot of stockings around the world this year, a lot of people woke up with Secrets in the Shallows in their stocking.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, that sounds like a great gift for the holidays, and it's great. It did well during the holidays.
Well, you know, I was really anticipating it. Excuse me. I was really anticipating a lot of people ordering it. So what I did was I made sure that I had plenty of books, and thank God I did. Because with Shoe Marks last year, I mean, it was flying off the internet shelf, just like Secrets in the Shallows is, flying off, you know, the, you know, people wanting a lot of personalized signed copies. And so we made sure that we had plenty of books, and boy, did they go fast.
Well, that's awesome that this book is doing so well. I'm trying to think
Thank you.
I've lost my question I was going to ask. I lost my train of thought. I hate when I do that.
I think that we all do that from time to time, don't we?
Yeah. So from the paranormal field, you've got, like you mentioned, Bill Bean, so you've gotten a lot of good reviews from people in the paranormal field about this book.
Oh, absolutely, including readers. If you go on Amazon, if you go on Goodreads, right now so far we have over 35 star reviews, and the book hasn't even been out that long. It just came out October 31, so. You know, to have over 35 star reviews in this short amount of time, you know, with the endorsements with Bill Bean, Michael Rivers, we have others. We have a Taps family member that has also endorsed it. So it has really, really taken off. And a lot of people were waiting the anticipation of Secrets in the Shallows coming out, and now once they read Secrets in the Shallows, they're absolutely hooked on this novel. They are waiting for book two. Like I said, we took a 900-page novel and we sliced it in two. Now it is two books, Secret in the Shallows and Devil in the Details, and that will be coming out soon.
Well, that's good that you broke that story up, because now the readers that do purchase Secrets of the Shallows, they're going to definitely buy the second book, because they got to finish. You know, you left off the cliffhanger, so you know they got to fill that void and find out what happens.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of people are anticipating it, because if you get close to the end of Secrets in the Shallows and reading all the paranormal and all the mystery and all the forensics that go into this, and you get to the end and you're like, what? Oh, no, you know, I still don't get to find out. But a lot of people are anticipating it.
Nice. And I do believe we have Kimberly on air with us now.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I am so sorry, everyone. I had a family emergency that I had to take care of, so I apologize for my tardiness tonight. But
that's fine.
I'm sure Karen was...
Karen's been holding it down.
Oh, I'm sure. I emphatically trust her with this, so, you know, I have no doubts.
Yeah, we were just talking about how well it's done over the holiday.
Yeah, I actually had a friend of mine up north actually wanted 10 copies of the books that were autographed shipped to her so she could give them out for gifts to all her family and family members. And she said that one person had already gotten to like chapter 9 in a matter of a few hours. And she says, "I'm so glad you gave me this. Thank you." So I was like, that's pretty cool. That was Laura's, one of her family members, Karen. She said that it was a hit. So, I've had several people, you know, I've had a number of book signings that I was able to do around here in shops and such. And even at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, I was really kind of excited about that one at their Speedway Club. And was able to do some book signings there in order to, you know, get the book out there, and have actually had to do a reorder already. And now I'm out of books again, except for about 3. So I'm going to have to reorder again. So it's coming along. I'm very pleased.
Oh yeah, definitely. Cool. Now for the listeners, Karen had talked a little bit about, you know, how she got into writing and meeting with you. How did you get involved in this and get into, you know, writing?
In writing in general? Well, it's just kind of been a natural progression because I've worked in marketing and advertising for about, well, over 20 years, we'll just say that. and I got into it, and I worked at an ad agency for about 11 years, and because it was a small ad agency, I had to wear a lot of hats. One of them being writing, you know, doing creative writing and such, and it just kind of opened that door. And then I became more of a, I actually found that I had a natural editing ability. And so I actually have, when the company ended up, I moved to another company's publishing company. They actually have a publishing side it's a totally different genre than you know, the horror or mystery and such. So it wasn't appropriate for them. For Mysterium, you know, that's why we went with Mysterium. But basically, I was able to edit about 25 different books through those means. So I just found that I had affinity for it. And when Karen actually asked me originally, she had asked me to edit the book because she needed, you know, a new editor. And when I got into it, and I was like, I love the premise of this story, but I think we can actually, you know, add more characters and even, you know, enhance it even more and make it into 2 books. And she loved the idea and the fact that we were so co-collaborating on it that she said, well, why don't we just do it together? And I said, that's awesome. Let's just do it. So it's been a fun project to work on. You know, I think that we've been able to both grow in our project, you know, work on this project together, especially with another person. And so as far as co-authoring, this was the first book that I had co-authored. I have actually been a contributing editor with another book that was a totally different genre, historical fiction. Basically based on Abraham from the Bible. But that was a number of years ago, and it was, you know, wasn't a fictional story. So this was a new venture for me, and I've really had fun with it. We're talking, you know, we'll sit there, and when we, you know, we've kind of taken a little bit of break from it due to the holidays, but we've been sitting talking about things that are going to happen in the next couple of books and, you know, how we're going to integrate some of these characters together and maybe add this or do that and everything. And, you know, we've been working on that. And so we have plans, you know, that we haven't even written down yet, you know, for the next, you know, for the next two books. But we're in the process of working on Devil in the Details. I don't know if she had mentioned that yet.
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, the cool thing about the books is that I think is unusual is that you actually can see things from multiple perspectives sometimes. You see a scene from different perspectives, or you see different scenes from different perspectives going on at the same time. You know, kind of like a movie or a TV show where when you change the set, the scenes, you're actually changing the characters. And it's in the same way. So it's not all told from a narrative point. It's more like you're there. Actually, in the second book, it's even, I think, even cooler in the second book with the prologue, because we actually tell a murder scene from three perspectives. I'm hearing some interference. Is anybody else hearing that?
Yeah.
Somebody's moving something, or I don't know.
Somebody's moving out.
Okay, I don't know what it is, but basically, you're seeing a murder happen from the killer's perspective, from the one that's being killed perspective, and from a witness. And each one is only seeing what actually feel experience the life. If it's far away and then it's not going to be, they can only see things. So it's a cool way. And then when the one goes unconscious because he's being killed, now he's incognito. So nothing can be. Is somebody moving? Because I'm hearing a lot of noise.
Yeah, I am too.
Karen?
You know what? You are breaking up on me just a little bit.
Are you moving anything? Are you moving?
I'm just sitting in my chair listening.
This is weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just sitting too, so. I'm not moving around over here. It could be the Skype connection. Sometimes it does that.
Maybe. But it was just, you know, it's going to be a cool book. And the nice thing is, in the second book, you know, there's plenty of great ghosts and such that are going to, you know, that are going to start being even more important in the second book. You know, they were starting to be there in the first, you know, had some paranormal. We're actually going to bring in a paranormal investigator in that book. So it's kind of going to be a little bit different than a lot of them, because we actually are paranormal investigators, both of us, and we know that equipment. So we can talk and tell, you know, we can write intelligently about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's, you know, that's going to be kind of a neat perspective on it as well. Now, one thing, did she tell you that we are going to be entering, and we're going to be entering into the New England Paranormal Awards.
Oh, wow, she didn't mention that.
For fictional.
Yes, I was actually going to get to that. The Paranormal Awards, which is going to be held in New England this year, is Secrets in the Shallows is going to be nominated.
Very nice. Very nice.
So we're hoping, you know, that would be a really big coup to be able to have that.
Yeah, you know, and this kind of this type of novel, you don't see a lot of murder / paranormal type stories. You know, you either have one or the other.
Right.
So this is kind of in its own little, you know, category as far as the way the novel is set up. So that's really cool.
And we have a lot of forensics, so for people that like CSI kind of things, and we actually did our research. We didn't just throw the stuff down on the page. I mean, we talked to doctors. We talked to, you know, law enforcement people. We talked to people that were arms experts about weapons. I even, you know, one thing that came into play was, I don't know if you ever seen the show Bering Sea Gold. You know,
Well,
they explain about their dive equipment, and there's a dive scene in the show. And so basically I used my information from the show to be able to, and I told Karen about these are the type of dive suits they would use, you know, because this is winter in Maine. You know, they can't do diving without, you know, the right equipment. So, you know, we even put that sort of thing in there. So we were we put a lot of attention to those type of details. I don't know about you, but I really have a hard time when I know that a book is impossible simply because they made up, you know, something based on a theory that isn't correct, or, you know, like, okay, the typical the elevator falls down the shaft, you know, there's actually brakes that prevent that from happening. You know, you'd have to blow out all the brakes and all the cables to get it to fall. So, you know, it's just things like that that, you know, bother me. And to me, it's important to have it right. I think you're cheating your readers if you don't write accurately.
You know, and that is one of the things that I want to add this to. You know, that's one of the things that I do want to point out is that not only, you know, like Kim said and what I said before Kim came on, is that we had so many people, professionals, that were giving advice on how to do things. But on one of the reviews, and if you read it, it is a 5-star review, The writer of the review said, these women write intelligently and they do not insult the reader's intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that we wanted to make sure that we did right, that we had everything down to the letter. We wanted to make sure that every T was crossed, every I was dotted. We wanted to make sure that everything was realistic. Like I said, I had lawyers on this. I mean, if there was a question, bam, I knew exactly who to call. So the person that wrote this 5-star review said, the writers of Secrets in the Shallows do not insult the intelligence of the reader,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very important.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. And I'm sure even the paranormal parts are, you know, as accurate as they can be from your knowledge of it being in the field and probably talking to others in the field as well. So, you know, that's really good because it appeals to the reader when the author goes to great lengths to make sure everything's as authentic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that that's one of the reasons why Secrets in the Shallows has done so well. It's that, you know, you have two paranormal investigators. You have two paranormal investigators that they know what they're talking about. And so that's really important. I mean, if you have a writer that just sits down and just starts throwing out all this stuff and this happened and that happened, that's not realistic, then you're going to lose your reader. They're going to put the book down and they're not going to put, you know, they're not going to pick it back up again. So with the knowledge that Kim and I have co-collaborating on this novel, I mean, I'm just thankful that we have a product that people really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So do you have, do you guys have plans to be at any conferences or whatnot in the next year, you know, pushing your book?
I'm hoping that, you know, we can be planning on doing that at least by around May. I may go, you know, I may be able to make it up to, there's the Mid-South, I believe. We might be able to make that, or and the one I would really love to go is if they're doing I can't ever pronounce it. The one up in Gettysburg that they do paraphernology or whatever it's called, 101. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I have a hard time pronouncing that one, but anyway. You know, there's several that I would love to go to, and hopefully, you know, we can start focusing more on doing those.
Right. And how long are you going to wait before you release the next one?
Well, we're working on the next one right now. We did, like I said, we took a little bit of a hiatus, you know, in order to get through the holidays.
Right.
Had a lot going on, but we're about probably, what, about 20% done with that one, so I'm hoping by late spring, early summer, that,
yeah.
You know, because we got a lot of it in our head, we just have to, and we've got a lot of stuff that we can pull from already, we just need to get it down on paper. It's not like we're trying to come up with the whole thing, we're just
right.
Having to get it down on paper. So we're already inspired as to what, you know, we're going to do. And the nice thing is that the storyline runs through all three books. So there's going to be things in the first book that are very insignificant or things you would hardly notice that you will realize later on, oh, that's why they did that, or that's what happened, or. You know, and I love those type of books. So I love, you know, I'm sure Karen does too, where you notice things important that didn't seem to matter at all. You know, there's little clues
oh, yeah.
in the first book that you won't catch probably. Sure they
are. Yeah, keeps the reader waiting. You know. Anxiously for the release of the next book so that they can get all the answers.
Yeah,
my
bank teller is actually a little mad at me. She says, "You didn't tell me that you couldn't find the answer in the first book. Now I'm going to have to slow down because I don't want to finish it and then have to wait." So she's actually slowed down her reading. She every time, "Have you finished that book yet? Have y'all finished that book yet?"
That's always a good thing, you know.
So I said, "Well, me and Karen are working on it. Don't worry."
Yeah,
she gives me this scowling look. "You haven't finished it yet, have you?" "I'm not going to talk to you." She does. Every single time I go in there.
Now, Karen, you, Kimberly, you were, you told me on the other show that you had paranormal experiences yourself. We talked a little bit with Karen about hers.
Oh, yeah.
What were some of your paranormal experiences that you've had?
Well, first of all, the way I got into the paranormal was when my dad passed away. And I actually saw him pass away. sorry, I have a frog in my throat. what happened was he had been in a coma for about 6 hours, and when he passed away, we were all in the room, or several of us were in there, and his eyes opened, and he smiled, and he looked up, and then he, like, lifted his shoulders up, and he was, you know, trying to sit up, and then he was gone. He was looking at something in the ceiling, you know, he was gone, and it made me want to know more, and I would, you know, watch the paranormal channels and stuff, and the shows and stuff, and got me into it, and I was actually, I earned my master's in biblical studies because I was searching for answers, and so when I met Chris, and he's actually haunted, so, you know, we've had a lot of experiences, and he warned me, he says, you know, it probably, I don't know when it'll happen, but eventually you're going to start having some paranormal experiences, just be wary. just be ready, yeah. And sure enough, and it was like there was one time that a can was knocked over, you know, full of like 3/4 full of soda, wasn't knocked over by any fans or anything going, and it was in the middle of the coffee table, and it was flung out off the coffee table. There was one time in particular that where we had a more malevolent spirit in our previous apartment. Fortunately, we're not there anymore. But I was sitting on the end of the bed, and Chris was sitting where he would normally sit, and we were talking one afternoon, and I heard this horrible, like, for lack of a better term, it was like a demonic growl. And it was low and guttural and rumbly and, but guttural, you know, I can't do it. And it was right there. I could feel it. I could feel the vibrations on the back of my neck. I could feel it in my ear, you know, as the sound traveled there. And I knew it was like right behind my right shoulder, behind me. And I froze like a deer, you know, and said like, and Chris heard it too, and he was a few feet away from me, and I just stood still, and I was looking at it, and I, before I could say, did you hear that, and I could tell, yeah, he heard that, and then it happened again, and I jumped in, I literally almost jumped straight up and into his arms, and he pulled me, and because, I mean, that thing scared the bejeebies out of me, I'm not kidding. But then about a week later, now we kept hearing a bunch of walking around the room and in the closet. We kept hearing the hanger slide back and forth and being thrown off the office. There wasn't a rat or anything like that. No evidence of that. And then about a week later, I was getting ready. I had just gone to bed. And my foot was hanging off the end of the mattress just a little bit. And something grabbed my leg around my shin. So I yelled to Chris, put my back on the bed, and I'm literally hovering between Chris and the spirit over her bed, and there's a tug of war going on.
Are you there, Karen? You're breaking up.
Yeah, no, I am barely able to hear anything.
Not Karen. Kimberly, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Kimberly, you still there? You're breaking up.
I'm breaking up. Okay. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay. Sorry. Could you understand anything that I said?
Part of it.
Okay. Sorry. Well, I'll tell you the last part of it. Basically, I was laying there, and I had just gone to bed, and my foot was dangling off the side. And literally, something grabbed my leg and started pulling me off the bed, like Paranormal Activity, the movie. And I yelled for Chris, put his arms under mine, and he started pulling me. And I was like a human tug-of-war rope between Chris and the spirit. And about four inches or 5 inches over the mattress, I'm sitting there, and in the middle of the night, I'm being pulled off the bed by something that I can't see.
Wow.
So, finally, now Chris has a spirit guide, angel, whatever you want to call him, we call Red, and he's seen him several times. And so Chris had never done this before, but he said he went ahead and called out for Red to come help us. And believe it or not, that night it literally let go almost instantly. And we never had a malevolent experience again. So it had been very consistent for a few months, you know, where we had been having a lot of activity going on. You know, like I don't know if you could hear me when I was talking about the growl behind my ear, but the growl was, I mean, it was beyond anything I could explain how it made me feel. It scared me half to death. It was just really, it was that demonic, guttural growl.
Yeah.
And it happened twice, and I mean, Chris heard it. You know, he's my witness. So anyway, what we did was after that, that's the reason why we formed the paranormal team, because we were like, okay, well, when you were a kid, you found out whatever you can and you could, and, you know, started using that as your, you know, battle, you know, basically your defense. You know, you knew what to do, you knew how to act, you knew what to worry about and what to not do. And so we went ahead and started our own group and started doing our own research even more. You know, basically, he had already learned a lot of stuff, you know, throughout the years after being haunted since he was 5. And so once we did that, we learned a lot of new stuff as we got involved in it. And you know, we've had a group for a number of years now. But we even have our web show that because Chris is an actor and he's been working, focusing on his acting career, as well as, you know, I've been focusing on my writing and editing. So we haven't had as much time, but we do have a YouTube channel called What Lies Beyond, the number 4 and letter U. And we've got some evidence on there from one of our investigations. And we have a web show as well. So, that's on YouTube.
You guys, not only did you do all your research with the police and whatnot, but, you know, you guys have done paranormal investigations and experienced paranormal things. So, you know, it's a good thing, because that's why your book's doing so well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know it's a realistic experience, you know. There's some things that are typical, you know, the stigmata thing, or the, you know, you see that stuff all the time. It's like, let's do something creepier and really more realistic, you know, not necessarily super over the top, you know, something that still scares the crap out of people, but not that isn't outside the realm of possibility, you know, or probability, let's say.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But the spirits are going to have the spirits are going to be an integral part of the book, because they're going to actually help with the investigation, you know, especially more in the second book. They are going to help certain things come to light that no one was aware of. So, you know, those things are going to come into play. And to tell you the truth, I don't know too many books that have really done that either. So, I mean,
no.
Every once in a while you might find one, but.
No, you know, and, you know, in my investigation experience, we've actually did an investigation where what the town knew that happened in the home as far as somebody passing away and what the spirits told us were two different, completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the spirits that we communicated with there were actually telling us that it was a murder and identified the murder, even showed our psychic the crime scene, actually what happened, like a movie in his head. You know, those type of things do happen, you know. And
yeah.
So, you know, for spirits to help put together, you know, the murders, that's definitely an interesting read.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that'll come into play more in the second book, but. Did you happen to read the scene where we have the paranormal activity where with Williams?
Yes, absolutely. I read it.
Oh, you read it? Okay, I figured you had. So, you know, that's something that, you know, could have happened, you know.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Well, we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show, so you girls want to throw out where you can find the book and all that information?
Well, you can find both the Kindle version and the paperback on Amazon.com. It's Secret in the Shallows, not Shadows, S-H-A-L-L-O-W-S, like shallow water. And you can also find it on, you can find our link on mysteriumpublishing.com. And Mysterium is M-Y-S-T-E-R-I-U-M, publishing.com. Of course, you can find my author page on Facebook. It's Kimberly Kimberly Brulette, author, editor. Excuse me. And you can also find me on Twitter as author Kimberly Brulette. So, and I believe it's write for you, which is write like you write, and then write like correctly, and then number 4, and then letter you. So,
very nice.
So, Karen, you can give your links. And you can also find us on Goodreads. Sorry.
Yes, absolutely. You can find Secrets in the Shallows on Amazon. All you have to do is write in Secrets in the Shallows, and it is right there. You can also go to my website, but that's, unfortunately, my website is being, it is up for maintenance right now, but you can also find us on Facebook under Karen Vance Hammond. That's K-A-R-E-N, V as in Victor, V-A-N-C-E, H-A-M-M-O-N-D. And you can find the book right there. Also, you can find Secrets in the Shallows on Goodreads. And so it is right there as well.
Oh, I did have one thing really quick. I don't know if you mentioned, but our book has been nominated on thebookawards.com. The People's Book Awards is what the name of the awards are. So if for those out there that would like to show their support, it's under thebookawards.com, and then it would you just search for Secrets in the Shallows. So if you would vote for it, we appreciate it very much.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for both of you coming on tonight.
Thank you. Again, I apologize for not being able to be on earlier. But
hey, it's better late than never.
Yep. So
I wish you guys all the success in your book in the upcoming year.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us on. You have a wonderful night.
All
All right, you girls have a good night, too. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, Mr. Jeff, you still with me?
Yeah, I had to change to using my phone.
Ah.
I don't care to do that.
Well, we're down to the last few minutes of the show anyway, so it won't really matter. Let's see. Let me look at the calendar here for... January the 5th, next Sunday, we will have paranormal investigator and psychic medium. No, wait a minute. I'm getting all mixed up. Paranormal investigator, Bill Householder. He's not a psychic medium, but he has a paranormal team, and we'll talk to him and probably a couple of his teammates next Sunday. So that's going to be our show for that. Terrify will not be on Tuesday because that's New Year's Eve. Full Spectrum Unleashed will not be broadcasting, or we'll Full Spectrum Radio because holidays. So I believe Project Paranormal Radio will be on this Thursday. And then we'll be back next Sunday.
Cool.
But Happy New Year's to everybody. Yeah, Happy New Year's to everybody, and stay safe out there. Don't do anything Jeff wouldn't do. And, you got a song to play us out on?
Yeah, here we go, Ring of Fire. Good night, everybody.
Good night. We'll be right back.